My name is Reverend Forrest Gilmore. I'm the Executive Director of the Shalom Community Center and Community Minister of Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Bloomington. Sorry, that's old times. And I'm not representing either of them today. I'm coming as my own person. So I am a white, straight, well-educated, gender-conforming, middle-class man. And if you talk about a picture of privilege, that's me. And one of the things that I've been fortunate enough to learn over the years is that in instances of recognizing the privilege that I receive, one of the privileges that I receive is that I don't have to think about and don't have to recognize the challenges that people experience when they experience sexism, racism, homophobia, et cetera. That's not something I see. I don't witness it. And because it's not happening to me. And I think a powerful lesson that I've learned around that is that just because it's not happening to me does not mean it's not real. I'll say this, another privilege that I tend to enjoy is that because I don't experience it as real, my natural tendency is to think that my experience is right. So I've been forced, fortunately, into a position of recognizing two things. One is that I need to listen a lot more to people in poverty, people of color, people who are oppressed in our society. But even more so, I need to trust the experiences that they tell me that they have.
Good evening. I'm Jennifer Brooks, and I was horrified by discovering the purchase of this vehicle in a community like Bloomington that loves to position itself as progressive and ideal. There are three places that I associate vehicles of these types: Ferguson, Missouri, Palestine, and Standing Rock. And in those three locations, what we witnessed was those vehicles being used against mostly brown and black bodies. Over and over again, we see that the militarization of the police is going disproportionately against non-white communities. And so the tone deafness of this community that nobody said in this process, I wonder if perhaps this is a bad idea, is absolutely unbelievable. We in this country have inherited a legacy of white supremacy. We did not create that system, but we have inherited it, and we have to deal a lot more honestly and proactively with what that means, particularly a community like this that is predominantly white and that believes itself to be progressive. What does that mean to have inherited all of the attitudes and the legacies of white supremacy? That's where this tone deafness comes in to me. It's impossible to reconcile being a community that puts forward an MLK Day. We put that forward, we wear it on our sleeves so passionately, and we don't even think about the way that a vehicle like this has disproportionately been used against brown and black communities. And that's not acceptable to me. I want our community to do better. We can do better. It's not hard to get educated on what the legacy of white supremacy is. It is currently Black History Month. We talk about what black culture is. We don't talk enough about what white culture is. And the speaker before me liked to talk about civility, and this idea of sort of a well-managed civil society is white. That is a white cultural attitude. And it dismisses the lived experience of black and brown communities.
Hi, I'm Brad Swain. I'm the county sheriff, and I thought I'd come over and share some thoughts and my insight. One thing I want to share is... One of the things that I wanted to share was that the CERT team also includes members of other law enforcement agencies, including deputies that work for me. So it's not just one agency that this vehicle would protect.
Yes, but all of the
teams.
Yeah. Take our lead. Yeah, give my allies. Come on now. If you're all engaged in this process, you can engage in this process. Let the chair speak.
Thank you.
One thing I'd like to point out is we've had a deputy shot at just a few miles from here, and his car was shot up. He had to return fire and wounded the man. He survived. I've never heard of Sandy Hook and some of these other communities until something tragic happened. We have a lot of dangerous weapons out there. We have a legislature which wants to take away the gun permits, where gun permits aren't issued to people, constitutional carry. Keep in mind that also is taking away the discretion of chiefs and sheriffs of deciding who in their community is dangerous, should have a permit revoked or not even be allowed to apply. Those are the things that we're dealing with. The other thing is that when we have a very dangerous situation with military-type weapons, we don't have the legal authority to call in the military. These situations have to be addressed by local law enforcement. There are constitutional provisions that keep military from being involved. So, yes, there are some military aspects to what we're doing, what we have to do, but we don't have the legal authority to call in a SEAL Team 6 or something. That responsibility rests right here with local law enforcement. If someone has a 50 caliber rifle and is shooting people from great distances and has armor piercing rounds, your local police are the ones that are going to have to deal with that situation. Somebody shooting up a school, local police will be the ones that have to address it. Thank you.
Hi there, I'm Andrea Geisbert-Williams, and I come from a little different standpoint. I am a spouse of the incident commander on the CERT team. Of course, there's a lot of emotion in my viewpoint, but I did take a little time to pull some numbers and look a little bit of history, and what I found was that about 10% of the felonious deaths that take place in police call-outs take place in a SWAT call-out. And from my own personal experience and some of the information shared by Chief Diefkoff in the presentation he gave shortly a couple weeks ago, he talked about the 17 incidents that occurred in 2017, the 15 in 2016, many of them including a standoff with armed suspects, suicidal people, confrontation with armed suspects, invasions with home robberies, and all of them using lethal force. So in essence, 32 times over the last 2 years, my husband entered a highly volatile situation willingly and without hesitation. He's a very ethical man, he's a hard worker, and he's committed to his job. From my standpoint, where I am is he leaves the house, and I don't know for 24 hours, 32 hours, 36 hours, if he's safe. And the possibility of bringing in something like this gives me a little bit more comfort about the fact that he has a way to protect himself. I know there was at least one situation where they had to call in an armored vehicle from Indianapolis, and they waited over an hour. And in the course of that wait, there was a death that possibly could have been prevented if they had the right tools to go in and protect that person. So, again, my standpoint is from an emotional place where I want to ensure that when my husband leaves the house and enters these situations willingly, that he's fully protected and that there's a security there.
My name is Lisa McCoy. These are my three boys. My husband is also a CERT officer. He's been with Bloomington Police Department for 17 years and with the CERT team for about 15. And we are in 100% support of this vehicle. There was a recent incident where the officers were out on a call and there were shots being fired at the officers, and my husband had dirt flying up in his face because the bullets were so close. We want our officers protected.
There has been a lot of talk about the safety of police officers tonight. One of the things that I want to make clear is that Black Lives Matter actually has a solution for that, a way to keep them more safe. We want to ensure that everyone in our community is safe. And that solution is Sean King's 25-point plan to reduce police brutality and overhaul the police. If even 5 of these solutions were to be put in place, the police would be safer and the community would be safer. Some of these solutions include radically diversifying Americans' police departments, require the police to have more training than cosmetologists. Police must be routinely and randomly tested for steroids and other illegal drugs. Bad apples must be fired. They are toxic and dangerous. The police must be required to earn a 4-year degree. It changes everything. Policing for profit must become a banned practice. A profit motivated must never undergird law enforcement. You must overhaul 911, particularly calls made about mental health and the emergency services. We must take women from 12% of the police to 50% of the police. They are more professional and less brutal and just as effective. Require cops to live in or near the areas they police. It is too easy to mistreat strangers. Communities of color actually need less policing. Start by decriminalizing addictions and petty offenses. American police must be regularly tested for racial bias. And the American police must be regularly tested and treated for PTSD. And part of what they're talking about there is the demilitarizing of the police, that the police systems have been flooded with ex-military and bringing those mentalities into the police departments. This is not a war zone.